You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yo, welcome back everybody, it's another episode of Fistful of Collars, and we are joined by our esteemed guests, none other than three-time IBJJF World Nogi Champion, and most recently bronze medalist at the 2019 ADCC World Championships, Mr. Josh Hinger. How's it going, Josh?
Doing well. Doing
welcome
well.
To Austin, my
thank
friend.
You. Thank you, yeah. I think what you meant to say is welcome to the Matt Burton podcast.
Special edition.
Flow Grappling edition. So
this is the collab, right? Yeah.
These are my guests today, the Flow Grappling crew. So I hope you guys are ready for some pretty hard questions.
No. You've been moonlighting. Well, you have actually been moonlighting the last couple of months, right? You transitioned from being a purely professional grappler. And you're making moves into the media landscape.
Well, I dabbled in the social media realm when I was writing for a few years, right?
True,
and
true.
Then, I got tired of the typing, and I found out that talking on a microphone is much easier, much more efficient.
Is that how that started? Because you kind of were a regular publisher on your Instagram of what we might call essays, and did that turn more into the podcast for you?
No, they have nothing to do with each other, to be honest.
No?
I just decided. Actually, I had a friend that was pestering me for years to start a podcast because he kept telling me, he's like,
You should do it.
We don't. Yeah, they just kept saying. And this was before Fistful of Collars, because how long has this been going on?
2.5 years.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe it was around the same time. But yeah, he was just saying there's not a whole lot of great jiu-jitsu podcasts out there, especially from competitors, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess that's kind of my niche.
No, that is true. There are a ton of jiu-jitsu podcasts out there, but they're generally like amateur things done, but just between fans, right? This, like, we're the only real jiu-jitsu media doing a podcast, and you, Matt Byrne, is the only jiu-jitsu podcast by athletes.
Right.
Yeah. And I love the perspective that you guys actually bring, because, you know, you and your co-host, Keenan Cornelius.
My co-host, my assistant.
your assistant presenter.
The order
sometime guest.
The sometime co-host.
But you and Keenan, I mean, there aren't many people who are as deep into the lifestyle,
trenches,
the industry, the business, whatever you want to call it, than you guys are, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, who could be, right? We're both all in full time, so yeah.
What's the response been like to it?
Positive, yeah. It grew much faster than I expected. To be honest, the first episode that we put out was so janky, you know? It was so bad. Like, there was an echo on the microphone. We had really bad acoustics. We had bad microphones.
Didn't have this beautiful studio, right?
We didn't have a studio. Yeah. We'd had some crappy computer camera. And then, but everyone liked it a lot. It was genuine. I think that's what it is. It's genuine. Like, well, we don't...
Exactly. That's the one thing you can always count on when you and Keenan.
Yeah.
You don't really filter anything,
do you? Prepare anything. We just show up. Like, maybe I jot down some notes on things that I want to remember to bring up, but like, there's no script, there's no practice, there's nothing. It's just raw.
Well, hopefully we can channel some of the Matt Byrne on today's.
Yeah, I'll just try not to curse so much. That's at least
we try to keep it PG friendly, but we are missing interrupting you with just a can of bang energy drink.
Yeah, I'm not accustomed to not being interrupted. So if you guys can just interrupt me as much as possible, so I feel like I'm at
Look
home.
Look at that, right there.
I mean, today we don't really have much of a script because we just like catching up with you, Josh.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done it many times in the past, whether it's, you know, on the road, whether it's going for dinner at tournaments, you know, whether it's just hanging out like we have in the last couple of days. You know, we were in the gym this morning. We were shooting an episode of Fix My Game with Chase.
That went great, man. That was super fun.
Had a great training session with Chase.
Went three rounds. He asked for one more round. He couldn't get enough.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot. It was great, you know.
Well, it was you pulled the classic beginner move when you said, hey, can we just like a light roll flow, like that's just warm up? And then he just came at me 100% full on. I was like, you were breathing hard within 30 seconds.
In my defense, you said I have one speed, on or off. I'm like, all right, I'll have to survive. So I put up a good fight. I did my best for you guys out there, but there's a lot of really good details coming. I learned a lot. So
what was the theme of the Fix My Game, do you think? I saw a few twisters in there.
There were some twisters.
That's the original guillotine.
Yeah, exactly. That was the name of the
wrestling. That's the first hanger team.
Really?
So he twisted me, I think, four times, maybe. But we actually covered in depth the guillotine.
The twister used to be my thing, purple belt.
Before the guillotine?
Yeah. Before I was, probably when I first started developing a guillotine game, I was all about the twisters. I would take the back, and I would never try to finish the rear naked chokes. I would always just opt for the twister.
Why was that?
No one knew how to defend a twister.
Everyone
knows how to defend a rear naked choke.
Right.
And lately, with the increase of eBay rules tournaments, like
people are really good at it.
Everyone's really good at defending their back. No one's good at defending a twister.
Yeah. To be honest, though, the opportunities for hitting it in competition is so is much less compared to other main attacks, right?
Yeah,
so, and it's kind of the thing you do to somebody in the gym as well. And once in a while, you do it, and people get mad.
Yeah.
People get really mad when they get twisted. So I don't know about you, but I would always like not twist the people in training for fear of pissing my training partners off.
This guy over here, the humble, gentle giant. Like, I won't twist you today. I don't want you to get upset.
Oh, no. It feels so good when you do, right?
Yeah.
When you put a twister on
it's
somebody.
It's such a satisfying move because, you know, you could have had other submissions. Like, but you just chose to embarrass this person. Mm-hmm. The same for the Gogo Plata, right? There's so many submissions you can get before you get to a Gogo Plata. But if you opt to choose the most embarrassing submission for your opponent, like, they know you're just trying to embarrass them. Like, and that's why they get mad
out here, fans.
Like,
their
soul just kind of crumbles in front of you as you're approaching the final submission, and they realize, like, oh, you bypassed an armbar just so you could do this. You bypassed a rear naked choke just so you could twister me. And then they know you're just trying to embarrass them.
Mm. Did you do any Gogo Plata today?
No,
he didn't.
No.
You didn't.
He didn't.
Because that is actually one of your weapons. Because you've got the hanger team. But there's the hanger plata.
The hanger team sets up the mono plata.
Mm-hmm.
The mono plata sets up the go-go plata. And so it's like if it's really just a choice. It's not like you have to you mess something up and then you have to go to the go-go plata. You really just kind of bypass the first two submissions to try to get this really cool unicorn submission, right?
Unicorn submission.
Yeah, it's like the uncapturable animal, right? That's what the go-go plata is. They call it the unicorn submission.
I like that.
Because you can't capture a unicorn.
Well, I can't wait to see the episode because it looked, you guys, I was sat on the side of the gym kind of just watching you guys. It looked fun, right?
It was fun.
I felt bad. I have such a weight advantage on Chase, and he definitely tried to do a few techniques that he probably would have been able to put a little more oomph into.
He's being generous.
45-pound weight difference right now or something?
What do you weigh?
I'm a solid 170 these days. But
are you 170?
No. I'm 140.
Yeah. I was going to say.
But it was fun.
I'm 185.
You know, it's always a great time to train with somebody that's really skilled. And, you know, I'd like to go after them and see what they want to do to me.
Oh,
that's
came,
the whole
you
point.
You came after me.
Right?
So you came after me like those white belt world finals.
That's what I have to do. That's what I have to do. So that was a good time.
Channel that spaz energy.
Yeah.
I love it.
But Hal, you and I have never trained, and when is this going to happen?
That, right?
I trained with Chase, I've trained with Reed.
I had a legit excuse last time, because last time you guys got murdered by Josh, we came to Atos, and I legit wasn't training for 3 months due to a really severe arm injury. Right now, I can just straight up say, I'm ducking you. My neck is bad enough as it is, thanks. I don't need it stretched any further. So
one day.
It would be a pleasure, I'm sure.
Would you ever consider competing?
Nah.
We've been trying to get him to do a Masters Worlds.
Can you imagine how many competitors would just be like, all right, Hal, remember that one time you...
Going to take on the flow grappling guy, get some extra points?
Most of the squad, besides Ryan, is Masters eligible, and I thought it'd be so cool to have everyone compete 1 year, just have the whole
that
team
would be cool.
roll out and do it.
The flow team?
Yeah.
I just turned Masters 3.
40.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that bad? That's a, no, thank you. No,
I'm,
no, no, no. It's
I'm
not.
Only a few years behind you.
Not true, yeah.
I'm only a few years behind you.
Mass is 8.
Yeah.
Not far off.
But you've competed recently in Fight to Win, Chase, right?
Yeah, I lost a Fight to Win in August.
You didn't have to say that you lost.
Right? I did. You know, it's the way it goes.
You got out
by
there.
Decision.
You got out
I wasn't
there.
Submitted, but it was a fun match. I've been on Fight to Win a couple times. Won my first match.
1-1.
1-1. I like to compete. It's fun.
And Reed has competed recently, right? Was it Pans last year?
He won Pans.
He won Pans.
Masters won his purple belt. The heavyweight division.
Master won purple.
Yes. Nice. He had a tough day that day. That was like four really tough matches.
And then he went back to work after he won?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We literally like, back to work. Put your gold medal down, pick up your camera, let's go.
Good for you, Reed.
Playtime's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try and get out there as much as possible. It's part of the game.
What about the other guys, Michael or Ryan? Do they...
Yeah, Michael, he competed Masters Worlds like just over 1 year ago, Brown Belt Masters. Ryan, when was the last time you competed?
I competed a little bit last year.
All right.
Competed a couple times, yeah.
All right, so we just need Hal to get in there.
Yeah, he's the only one, man. The only one.
Crazy thing, I've never competed as a black belt.
Really?
Last time I competed was as a brown belt when I was still living in Rio.
You should do a fight to win, dude. Just one match.
That's a good
just
one, yeah,
one match.
You don't have to worry about
you could handpick your opponent, maybe.
Yeah.
I did some local state tournaments in Rio and stuff, and that was a lot of fun because they're always like really weird venues. You know, you've got like these semi outdoor. Sometimes you're competing in like 95 degree heat in like a tin shack. I did that. Literally, I did that. It was incredible. But you know, yeah, it was fun.
Chase, do you have a routine that you run through when you're coming up into a tournament, like the morning of or the day before? Like, do you have any rituals? Or
I like to drink as much coffee as possible to set myself into pre-cardiac arrest and then stress out and take a really gnarly combat dump. Like, that's the morning for me.
Okay. Combat dump.
Yeah. But I could probably use some advice, Josh. You're a little bit more seasoned competitor.
I've got your last match pulled up right now.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. There's nothing you need to see in there. Josh.
Combat dumps are a real thing, though. The adrenaline and caffeine mixed together. Oh, geez.
Super important that you go to the bathroom before your match.
Well, that's why whenever you go to a jiu-jitsu tournament, wherever it is, you always try to find that one bathroom that nobody else knows about.
The hidden
right?
bathroom, yeah.
There's always a hidden bathroom.
Of course.
And you got that bathroom. Yep. You don't tell anybody else about it.
You're the only one who knows about it, yeah.
Because the public bathrooms are just like a bomb site, right? It's just like a giant
and there's always
bombs gone off.
Yeah, there's always a line, and there's always a mess. Like someone just like had to defile the toilet.
Yeah.
The end of the day is a horrifying experience. Like we're in there working, you know, till 8 p.m. and sometimes it's that time, and you walk in there, and it's like, oh my god,
halfway through the halfway point of the day. Like the toilets and the bathrooms are like they're respectable up until like you know noon or 12, 2 p.m. and then after that, it's like just
right
don't,
off. Yeah,
just don't.
You know, we've always seen those the stories about like the you know the generally a white or a blue belt just walking into the bathroom
barefoot.
Like barefoot.
Oh god. Yeah.
So I actually saw somebody do that at Masters Worlds most recently, and it was a blue belt, and he just like I guess he just come off the mat because he's kind of sweaty and stuff, and he obviously gave zero Fs and he was just marching straight towards the bathroom and he just about crossed the threshold and I was looking and I was about to say
almost
something.
Gradually.
I was about to say something. And I don't know who, I don't know how, I think it was like a teammate or something or somebody who was with him and just a pair of flip-flops literally came flying through the air.
Someone threw them at him.
Threw them at him, hit him in the chest and he just kind of turned around, picked them up, put them on and walked on and I was like, thank God for that.
What a hero.
Right?
Who was that person?
I know, give that guy a medal.
It was actually just a little grandma. You know how the little grandmas are throwing their slippers at their kids?
Yeah.
What's your routine, Josh, for a pre-tournament morning of?
Well, let's go the night before.
Okay, it starts early.
Let's say 48 hours before, right? Because a lot of people are always concerned about their weight, okay? And and I don't like cutting weight anymore, right? But I'm always within a few pounds. This is not really cutting, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're concerned about the few pounds and maybe you don't want to have to go do a workout right before your division to sweat off some pounds, it's important that you chug a gallon of water every single day for that entire week leading up to the tournament.
Mm. It's called super hydration, is that?
Yeah. And then your body just gets used to flushing itself out, right? You're drinking, you're going to the bathroom, you're drinking, you're going to the bathroom. And then you stop drinking water 24 hours before you weigh in, right? And then that last 24 hours, you just don't consume any fluids, right? And your body will just continue to let the water out because it thinks it's going to get more. It's been getting a lot of water the whole week. This is a really great way to just shed those last few pounds of water without having to cut or like sweat or work out or... So what I try to do the night before the tournament is I try to make sure I'm maybe 1 pound over the weight, right? But I'm very well hydrated, so you can rest assured that you're going to lose some weight overnight. They call it floating, floating the weight off. You're going to wake up, you're going to go to the bathroom, you're going to be a pound or 2 pounds under at least. You know, and then you have room for breakfast, right?
Do you like to eat?
I eat breakfast. Right. I always eat breakfast. I can't not even imagine not eating breakfast for a competition.
Because I've seen, you know, guys, you know, they go to the bullpen, they step on the scale, and they jump off, and the first thing they do is they start ramming food in their mouth. They're like, finally, I can eat.
It's too late, though.
Right?
Like, it's too late. That food is not that.
And you step on the mat with a stomach full of...
Yeah, the food is just here. It's not in your muscles. It's not in your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting in your stomach. And now you just, you complicated your your competition situation. So I always, if I'm a pound over the night before, I'll usually wake up on or under, okay? So then I can go eat breakfast. I like scrambled eggs and pancakes or toast. Not like the bad kind of pancakes, but maybe some buckwheat pancakes or some whole wheat pancakes.
You're not talking about like whipped cream.
Yeah, I know. Spare yourself the sugar. You know? And of course, we all need room for coffee, right? Mm. So you got to have room for coffee. Now, if you eat to the point where you're, again, 1 pound over, and this is the morning of the competition, you still have 2 or 3 hours before the division. That food is going to digest. As long as you're not drinking a lot of fluids, you're not going to really retain very much weight. The food doesn't weigh much. Okay, fluids weigh a lot. So if you eat yourself to about a pound over and you have about 3 hours before your division, that's going to digest. It's going to go down on its own. You don't have to do anything. But if you give yourself a legitimate warm-up and you actually work really hard during your warm-up, you're going to lose another pound at least. You'll be back under a pound. Under the weight class, so that's what I like to do.
Yeah. And what about like morning off and stuff? You know, when you're in the bullpen, are you the kind of guy headphones in, hood up, don't talk to me, or are you a little bit more open?
I like the headphones because it deters people from trying to talk to you. Mm. That's one good thing there. But I don't like to consume a bunch of music or noise in my head before.
Sometimes you just put them in. It looks like you're listening to something. Yeah,
or I'll just put them in for a little bit and take them out because what I really want to hear is the roar of the arena.
Right.
Right? This is what you're going to be listening to when you're competing.
It's a trigger, right?
Yeah, and if you're listening to music and the music's hyping you up and you're feeling all good and then you take it out, you just lost your stimulant.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? It's like if you took the caffeine out of your body. Like that
horrifying
that,
idea.
This was the thing. This was the thing that was giving you the motivation. This was getting you pumped and you took it out right before you go out to fight. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So, I try to hype myself up in my own head and just listen to the crowd, listen to the people yelling, the coaches screaming, the fans. This is what makes me feel anxious, like in a good way.
So when it comes to the actual the match itself, when you step on and you know the ref calls you onto the mat, you step on, you slap hands. Are you one of those guys you just go out there and you're just like, I'm going to try to take this guy out as quickly as possible so I can rest as much as possible for the next one? Or do you like to feel the guy out and use the first match as a warm-up or what?
Yeah, I don't. I try not to completely blow my wad on the first match, right? But it happens. Happens. Like, and the
you can only control so much, right?
Right. Yeah. If he comes at you 100% the way Chase did at me this morning, you have to match that. You have to. If you lose your first match, you go home, and so it doesn't. If you spend all your energy to win that first match, it's not in vain. Like, you need to win that match, otherwise you're done. There's no second chance. You lose, you go home. So yeah, I think what's most important is that you do a really hard warm-up in the warm-up area with a teammate. Like, do a match. Not a 10-minute match. Do 3-minute matches. But do a real match. Like, really, really try to go after each other. You know, like...
Do you try and get that adrenaline dump early before that first match then? Is that the idea? To really get a sweat in, to get your heart going?
You want to get the... Yeah, you want to jack your heart rate. You want to blow out the lungs and get your heart rate up as high as you can. And you want beads of sweat dripping down your face. This is when you're ready. This is when you're warm. Like, you're never warm if you go to training. You're not warm the first round. You're not even warm the second round. The third round, you're probably warm.
And that's, yeah, absolutely. Right? Like, nobody goes in cold and just starts performing to the fullest, right?
No.
It takes a while. As you like you say, it's like halfway through the training session, you're feeling really loose. Everything's moving. You kind of, you know, your brain is fully switched on. So it takes a while, right?
I think a lot of people are too concerned with conserving their energy for the actual matches, so they don't want to have a hard warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
But think about how you've been preparing for the past 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You've probably been doing 6, 7, 8 rounds in the training room. So you're going to have 4 matches, maybe 5.
Right.
You know, unless you're like blue belt middleweight, they have like 7?
Six, seven. Occasionally, but usually 6.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's a normal training session, right? So you have the, if you prepared yourself, you have the energy to do a good warm up and get through your matches.
So the whole thing about sort of the conserving the energy and the pacing yourself and stuff, you kind of going on from that, the strategy, let's talk about that a little bit, because you're a finisher, you know. Yeah. You're a guy, you have a reputation, it's no secret what you like. Yeah. Okay, your name is attached to that very technique. Yeah. But sometimes you meet somebody and you think, shit, they know what I'm going for, it's going to be more difficult to get it.
Yeah.
Do you how much do you game plan for the guy in front of you?
All I need to know is whether they want to be on top or bottom.
That's it?
This is what's most important to me. I just need to know, is he a wrestler who wants to be on top? Am I going to have to take him down? Or is he a guard puller? And I just need to be prepared for him to pull guard, and I can accept my top position.
So you're not looking at him and thinking, oh, yeah, this guy, spider guard player, blah, 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 left side, De La Riva is going to be dangerous. Or
not that
he's got
detailed.
I
just need to know if they're on top, if they like to be on top or on bottom. And if they have a niche technique, I need to know what that is.
Right.
You know, like I knew Adam was going to play butterfly guard against me. I knew Thor was going to try to leg lock me. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as I have a general understanding of their basic strategy, then I feel like I'm prepared enough.
What about adjustments? Like, you faced Mateus Denis several times of your career. You know, what do you take away from a match, win or lose, that you use to apply in a future match?
So what I've learned from Mateus is that I need to not get frustrated with our lack of inactivity. I just need to stay the course, right? If I stay the course with Mateus, I usually win, right? If I just don't get concerned with being exciting, don't be concerned with penalties. If I want to win against Mateus, I need to just focus on winning. It's when I get frustrated with the lack of action, or if I'm trying to make it a more exciting match, or if I want to try a new strategy, which mm-hmm. I tried twice and it didn't work, mm-hmm. right? I didn't stick to my A game, mm-hmm. right? I deviated. I pulled guard. I tried a technique that I'm not normally trying, and it failed, and I lost. And that's what it is. So,
because Mateus is extremely, he's extremely defensive and extremely solid, right? It's like banging your head against a brick wall.
Yeah,
right?
And he won't deviate from his game plan.
Well, I think enough to have, you know, he's faced you enough times now. He knows that if he opens up,
right,
he's probably going to get caught by something.
Yeah,
right?
The first time that we faced each other at Nogi Worlds 2016, he ended up pulling guard in the last minute. And that's when I capitalized, and that's when I won. I won in the last 30 seconds of the match because he deviated from his plan. Mm. He tried to do something different because we were being super boring. We were forehead to forehead for 10 minutes almost. There was a few scrambles, but no one solidified anything. He almost got behind me with a duck under one time, and I almost got his head in a snap down one time. But that was it. We scrambled out of it, and it became both a stand. We got back to our feet and more forehead to forehead action. And I think towards the end, he tried to make something happen by pulling guard, and that's when I capitalized. And the same thing happened inversely recently, is like nothing was happening at Kasai. The referee warned us, like, hey, come on, like, guys, let's try it. Let's go for it, you know? So I was like, okay, it's my turn to go for it. I'll try something. And it didn't work out, and he won. And, you know, it sucks, but
strategically, it didn't work in your favor. But you mentioned something interesting to me yesterday, just when we were chatting about that match in particular, about how you had it in mind as well, that you knew that it wasn't just a case of winning a gold medal or a tournament. It was a super fight, and you felt like a certain responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I think tournaments and super fight pro events are very different. Like in a tournament, excuse me, you got to do what you got to do to win. Okay, in a super fight pro event, you're there to put on a show. You're there to be entertaining. You're there to go for it. You're there. You know, they're paying you for your services, and your services are exciting jiu-jitsu, right? They're not paying you for boring jiu-jitsu. They're paying you for exciting jiu-jitsu. And in the IBJJF, I don't feel an obligation to be exciting, right? I'm there to win. I'm there to get through that round and on to the next round. And if it happens in an exciting way, great. And if it happens in a boring way, so be it. but at Kasai, the match was becoming quite boring, and it was very typical of us to be forehead to forehead and not be doing anything. So I thought, man, and I thought about this before the match. I thought, if it's boring, I'm going to try something different in the last minute. I tried it. It didn't work out. Do I regret it? Yes and no. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I don't regret going for it. I just regret I regret what I decided to do. I should have tried something different.
Right.
I needed to do something. It was the last minute. Something needed to happen.
For those who haven't seen it, you tried a...
I tried a flying armbar.
Flying armbar.
Yeah. But, and I've done them before.
Pretty risky technique.
Yeah. Like I did it with Adam Wheeler. But Adam is very big and strong, and I had a lot to hold on to.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't think... I was pretty tired at the end of that match with Mateus. And I think I just lost my grips on him, you know. And he's a very explosive guy. So when he ripped out of it, he just ripped out of it clean. And his pulling of the arm over-rotated me. So and that's why I landed like on my neck.
Straight
yeah.
on your neck, right? That looked like a nasty fall.
Yeah.
How bad was it?
At the moment, I didn't feel any pain.
Right. Were you like seeing stars or anything?
No.
No?
Maybe a... No, no stars, nothing like that. But I was confused about where we were because I thought...
That's terrifying, yeah.
No, I thought when it all settled, he came out of the front headlock position, right? And then he spun behind me. And I thought, oh, shit, he's spinning behind me. I can't let him get 2 points. So I picked my knee up off the mat, thinking that he would get 2 points if he got behind me. But he wouldn't have because I was the guard puller.
Right.
But I didn't process that in the moment. And I thought, oh, shit, he's going to get 2 points. Take your knee off the mat. And then he put the hooks in. And then I got, you know, my back taken. So, but I don't know why I thought that. I think I was just dazed and confused. And I thought him getting behind me was going to give him 2 points, but it wouldn't because I pulled.
I think what you're saying there about that responsibility to entertain and the mentality that you should have if you're going to go into a super fight. Do you think that's an issue? Do you think that maybe that some people are just too concerned with winning and maybe a little less concerned? Because professional jiu-jitsu relies on people putting on a good show, right? And I know that, of course, athletes, they're not going to put themselves in a position where they just like throw it all away.
Right.
But they need to open up, right?
I think they should, yeah. I think, they gave us even – the rules meeting, they said, guys, like we need a show. Like we want to see submissions. We want to see attacks. And I'm all for this. And I felt – it was my first time in Kasai also, you know?
Right.
And I didn't want to like leave a bad impression. I didn't want to –
not getting invited back.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to stay forehead to forehead with someone for 10 minutes. Like it's super boring. I'm embarrassed when those types of match happen. Like I just – I feel guilty. Like I feel like
– And, you know, we've seen it actually, right, time and time again. Sometimes the more disparaging comments that we see, why is that guy getting invited back? You know, it's like, well, because win or lose, they're exciting to watch, you know, and there are tons of people who are going out there and maybe their record is a little more mixed, but you'll see them on Fight to Win every other week or something, and they'll be competing and win 1 week and lose the next and then back again and they'll do it again. But generally, people want to tune in to watch them, right?
Yeah, they're going for it. You got to respect that.
So the athletes need to understand that if they want to have that option, if they want to be competing on the pro stage, then it's a definite shift in attitude towards what they do in a tournament context.
Well, I do think it's the big dilemma in pro jiu-jitsu, right? Because to me, and this is debatable, but jiu-jitsu is about control. And control isn't always exciting. You know, that might mean like grinding it out on top and slowly getting the pass, and that could be a 4 or 5 minute sequence. But pro jiu-jitsu is supposed to be exciting and flair and, you know, getting the submissions out of nowhere. But that really isn't some people's game. And so that's why different organizations have kind of gamified the rules a bit, like EBI being the most obvious example of starting on the back. What do you think about rules really dictating the excitement of a match, you know, like instead of taking it out of the hands of the athletes and putting it into the
rules. Let me ask you this. Do you believe Fight to Win matches are generally more entertaining than IBJJF matches?
Depends on the competitor, obviously.
It does.
Yeah.
But generally. Because the rules should influence the style of the competitor, right? And do we see that change? Do we see that shift?
For me, not enough for me to say an absolute definitive yes. Not enough. I think that, you know, that the point system, and you've talked about this really well in the past, that the incentive to improve your position and to advance your game and to dominate their opponent by an increasing number of points for each position that you secure, that should theoretically lead to a position to finish the match, is a pretty good incentive to go out there and to do that. there's also the incentive that, you know, that you can win on scraping by an advantage. But then to use the example of submission only, you will see guys do very little for maybe 7-8 minutes and then just throw up a shitty footlock and like, it's the winning by advantage equivalent of submission only, you know?
Yeah.
But then there are other guys who'll go out and they'll throw the kitchen sink at the dude and they'll just be like, I'm going to get you whatever means possible. So it's not an easy answer, right? I think the rule set doesn't necessarily dictate, because ultimately it's in the hand of the athlete.
Right. So. But so you don't believe, based on what you said, is that people are employing the exact same strategy they do in the IBJJF, where they try to steal an advantage at the last second. They do that in Fight to Win also, where they're trying to steal the invisible advantage in the referee's mind
before
the last, you know, 30 seconds of the match ends.
It happens, for sure. So I wouldn't say it's a huge problem. I wouldn't say it's massively prevalent or anything.
I'm not saying that either, but I see it happen.
Yeah.
So I understand what Seth tried to do, and I think a lot of people don't understand what Seth tried to do with his event. It's like he's trying to release you as a competitor. He's trying to free you from the constraints of points, right? So that you can just, if you see that submission for 1 second, you can jump on it and you can go for it without worrying that you're going to lose by 2 points. Because,
and even if the guy passes your guard, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you had that submission attempt.
Yeah. So he's trying to release the inner beast in these athletes. The problem is the athletes are so obsessed with winning that they want to play a safe game, and they want to try to play that, like, I'm going to steal the advantage of the last second strategy. And this is not what Fight to Win is all about.
Mm-hmm.
I think if people can release themselves from that, I need to win, even if it's just by a fraction margin, and just go and try to have fun. Just go out there and try to do it.
We've actually got Fight to Win playing just as we're talking right here. You can see it up on the screen right there. It's your most recent match with Murilo Santana.
Oh, yeah. I felt bad about that match because it wasn't very entertaining.
Hey, Ryan, can you pull up the match maybe with Arnaldo? That was a great match, right?
Yeah, so that was a good example of
Arnaldo Oliveira. Just kind of cut loose. Do you remember the Fight to Win number? It wasn't that long ago. It was pre-ADCC, right?
It was.
Yeah, just see if you can find that. Joshinger Arnaldo Oliveira Fight to Win.
That was in Seattle.
Yeah, that was a real fun one.
It might have been 28.
That was a good example of you, like,
just cut loose
constantly. Yeah, just let it go, chasing after it, right?
Yeah, I just was nonstop for 8 minutes. I just was going to grab anything I could grab. Maybe with Murillo, Murillo did a really great job of standing in a way that took away all my favorite positions.
Really,
right?
He's so smart.
He's a great strategist.
He is,
and I knew he would be. And even I talked to him afterwards, and I mentioned that to him. I said, "Man, your strategy, you changed it significantly." Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me and he goes, "Well, I'm not stupid." And I, you know, he's not stupid at all. Of course not. No.
I gotta say, I respect Murillo so much as a competitor, because he is he's technically phenomenal, right? He has an amazing game, but like you say, strategically as well, it's he can do so much without doing anything, almost, right? Makes sense.
I didn't realize how flexible he was.
Oh yeah,
super flexible.
Yeah, he's God.
He can throw that. He can throw his hamstring almost behind his ear.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't realize that,
because he's not a small guy.
Yeah. No, he's not. I like Murillo a lot.
Great coach too.
And he's like one of the last of that generation. Mm. He's one of the last of the OGs that are still actively competing. You know, a lot of people from his generation have retired.
Mm. True.
But he's still in there.
You know? Still in there in the adult division.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that was not, I think we both were a bit more conservative for that match. I was being careful because he was baiting his lead leg, his left leg, and that's the leg I snagged.
Ooh, it is the match with Arnaldo, by the way. Sorry.
So he was baiting that lead leg, which is that's how he caught me last time. As he had that leg forward, I grabbed it. I went to his back. We got into a hot scramble, went out of balance. We came back in standing up again. And I did the exact same thing again. I grabbed his lead leg, and then he snapped the head down and guillotined me.
That was 2016 Worlds, right?
Yeah, open class.
Yeah, because that's the year you won your first World Yogi title.
Yeah, and actually Murillo was in the weight class.
Who did he lose to?
He missed weight.
Oh.
Yeah, he missed the weight, and then he signed up for the open class. But he was signed up for my division.
Wow. And he made it through to the final that year against Yuri
Tomois. Yeah, and it was a ref decision with Yuri. Mm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Wow. That was a wild tournament, because that was obviously that's an extremely memorable one for you as your first World Nogi title. But tell us a little bit about that day, because it was somewhat of a roller coaster experience, right?
So the reason actually that day stands out in my mind, because as we were talking about the morning of preparation, like competition day, like morning routines, is I completely botched my morning. Like, I came in super late because we had our whole team up there. We were in like two vans.
Drove all the way up from San Diego.
11
right?
hours. Yeah. We drove two vans with 15 people in each van.
Wow.
And we were all in the same hotel. And of course, we had problems like what time is the van going to leave because everyone's competing at a different time. So I went in the second van. And I thought I had enough time, and the van pulls up, and then there's, of course, there's a really long registration line, and I did not account for this. Like, I just cut the line. I had to. And because sometimes they have a black belt line, sometimes they don't.
True.
I think at that time they didn't. And I just had to cut the line because it was getting so close. And actually, right when I walked into the venue, they were announced, they're calling my name on this loudspeaker. Like, I was up, ready to go. Like, Josh, come to the bullpen now. I didn't even check my weight or anything. But luckily, I was already 5 pounds under. I was severely underweight for that division, so I wasn't too concerned with that. But I didn't get a warm-up at all. I got breakfast. That's good. I had coffee. Good. Was the coffee digested? Probably not. Was it breakfast digested? No. But I ran into the bullpen, and I remember I was sitting there. I was thinking, man, then this guy, he had already had one match. I had a bye. So he had a round already. He was hot.
Do you remember who he was?
Yeah, he was from Hibero. What's his name? He's from Oklahoma. Hibero Jiu-Jitsu. Not Lovato, but
Steven Patterson.
Nope.
No. Okay.
No, he's Caprito.
Oh, got it.
That'll come to me.
Yeah.
But he already had it. He had had a match already, so he was warm. He was hot, coming off a win. He's got motivation. He's feeling good. And I was cold turkey, you know. And I was like, man, I didn't get the warm up at all. I was in that bullpen. I walked over the mat. I did a couple of stretches, a couple of yoga stretches, twist. I was like, all right, well, here we go. Let's see what happens. And I just told myself I was just gonna be really chill the first 3 minutes. You know, hand fight a little bit, hang on the head, and just kind of allow myself to warm up to the match.
Nice.
Luckily, I won.
Hey, Ryan, see if you can pull up which match should we pull up from that one?
That was maybe the quarterfinals.
Should we pull up like the Kitdale match? That was a fun one, right?
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Was it? No, I, hang on, wait. Was, that was a different year.
That was kind
Sorry.
Of boring.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of the one from 2017.
But 2017 was when I was at middleweight.
That's right, yeah. No, hang on, wait. Was the year that you finished Kit? 2018.
I actually didn't finish him. I had him wrapped up in a guillotine when time ran out.
Oh, he ran out of time. Oh, I thought that was a tap.
Okay. I mean, maybe he tapped right at the buzzer.
Okay. Well, which match? Let's pull up a match from
actually,
any
did,
of your
actually,
world,
did tap
any of your world no-gi championships. It's a good one to pull up. We can just run it through while we're chatting.
You can pull up one of yours with Dante. There's a couple good scraps.
Yeah, let's see. Look at that one. That was a really close one. That was a ref decision.
There you go. Dante Josh Hinga, Dante
yeah.
Leon,
Dante's, Dante's got a lot of momentum right
get
now.
That one up,
yeah, he's
so.
Killing it, especially in no-gi. I think he's really fun to
I like Dante through. A lot. He's a cool dude.
He's awesome, man.
And he's coming off some big wins. So he finished Izaki, right, at Fight to Win.
By guillotine.
With a guillotine, yeah. After he had me at his academy for a seminar.
Oh, really?
No way.
Yeah.
Coincidence.
No, I mean, the seminar, I did the seminar at their academy in like 2017 or 18 or something. It was a while ago. But
I remember you saying that, because you fought Dante at the Chicago Open like a way
No, it was
back.
American Nationals.
Oh, sorry, American Nationals.
Yeah, American
way
Nationals.
Back. And then you fought him again at No-Gi Worlds last year.
Right.
And you felt like
a He was a completely different right? grappler.
Huh.
Yeah, he was completely different.
Did that throw you off? Because, you know, when you go up against somebody once and you think, okay, I kind of know what to expect.
Yeah, it's very difficult to beat someone the same way multiple times.
Right.
Right? Like, they learn about your jiu-jitsu. They know how you feel. They understand your pressure. They know what to expect, and they're better prepared for you.
You want the one from No-Gi World?
Yeah, it was the semifinals. But so it was the it was No-Gi Open Class American Nationals, and yeah, I mean, I think I won pretty decisively. I think I ended up on his back and with a rear naked choke. But and then it was after 2017. Then him and Gutenberg invited me to their academy. I ran the whole seminar at their academy, and then I was thinking to myself, like, I hope I don't have to fight Dante again anytime soon because I literally just showed him all of my A game,
oh,
like
no way.
Everything. I didn't hold anything back. I showed them everything. It was a great seminar too. They packed the room. Vitor Oliveira showed up with some students.
Oh, that's
like,
cool.
Yeah, Gutenberg supported it. Like, I crashed in Gutenberg's room. He was out of town. I just want to like thank those guys because it was a great time. Yeah.
That's cool.
I think it's really cool when competitors are cool enough and open-minded enough to invite a fellow competitor to their academy to teach.
Right.
Like, that says a lot about their character.
Yeah.
Like, you're a solid dude.
Yeah.
You know? Like, no ego there at all.
Yeah. Because, you know,
they're putting money in my pocket, and I'm fighting these guys.
Well, that's what
you know
I'm
what I mean?
To say is that, you know, some people could maybe get a little bit like, let's say, protective. Because some guys, they hate other people seeing what they're doing in the gym.
Yeah.
They hate things like, you know, oh, the guy's going to see all my secrets, you know? And then yeah, you go to a competitor's
gym. Two competitors. Kuhnberg and Dante.
And you go to this rival team and you go to the gym and you show them your techniques. That's remarkable. But also, you know, they're cool enough guys that you're willing to do that, right?
Yeah, so they invited me out. They paid me. They gave me money to, like, teach jiu-jitsu at their academy. Like, that's great. Like, I was really thankful for that.
That's really cool.
You know, and it's not too often that I get invited by people who I compete against.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen very often.
But the match with Dante then, we got it playing here.
So this was after the seminar. Yeah, so I taught that seminar at his academy in 2017. And this was, this was middleweight semifinals 2017.
He's got that really tricky guard, right?
Yeah. He got under me a few times.
He's good at that. That's the thing. People see Dante and they think, oh, he's this little powerhouse.
No, he's super flexible.
Really good bottom game.
Yeah, he's got a great guard.
So how did you approach it then? How did you, you know what he's going
to
do,
right? Well, I was trying to play the same game that I played on him the first time, which is just kind of like let him set up De La Riva. Uh-huh. And I was going to try to pressure into him and make him tired and then eventually pass the guard and I would hope to take his back. I would assume he will turn. But I was having a hard time getting around his guard. He kept on throwing that the calf slicer in there and working towards my back and getting underneath me and playing some X guard. And there were some situations that I was like, I have a good picture from the situation where he's underneath me and my legs are kind of split and Gavao's yelling at me and I'm like, what? What do I do? Like, I'm pretty sure any way that I move, I'm screwed.
Yeah. Not a very leggy grappler, are you?
No.
Even from top, and not just from talking about your guard, but a lot of people, you know, from top, they'll do things like leg weaving and so on and different stuff. You're all about that.
I'm all about the pythons. I got these weapons. I gotta use what I got. No. You're not talking about leg attacks per se.
I'm talking about using your legs. Even from top, you'll see a lot of guys, really. They'll use like, you know, intricate footwork and stuff to pass the guard, but you
prefer. No, I'm like head down. I'm like more of a head down, like put pressure. My legs are simply a driving force. Like push them on the mat and develop pressure. And
where does that come from, you think?
It was Gao Pao. Oh, yeah. This is Gao Pao style jiu-jitsu. He's just all about head, shoulder down and get up on your toes and hips off the mat and just like put that lean on them, you know, and just that's how you grind someone down, make them tired. Just keep leaning on them.
What's his pressure like?
It's awful.
Awful?
It's horrible, yeah.
Really?
It's horrible. If he just gets the grip that he needs, you're done. Like that, you have to just not let him get that grip that, you know, like the pant and the collar. Just, if he does that, you're done. And he'll just start putting he's really good at changing sides, you know, left, right, left, right, left, right. And this is very difficult to deal with, and it's exhausting.
What I really like about Galvao is that as he's gotten older, his game has evolved and is adapted around, you know, the limitations that come with age, right? Because he was so agile when he was young, right? He was so dynamic, so flexible.
He was just jumping all over the place.
Absolutely, yeah. He was just like a little monkey, bah, 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 all over the place. Truth is, you slow down as you get older, right?
Yeah.
But he's still got that misdirection and like you say, the changing sides and stuff.
Yeah, you saw him on Penna.
Oh yeah,
he was changing sides back and forth, and he kept moving. He did not slow down. He was less jumpy.
Right.
He was more
exactly
calculated.
He's less acrobatic.
Right.
But it's still the same principle. Yeah. Right?
A lot of shin cutting and knee sliding and just changing directions and you just saw him. He wore Penna down. Just kept that pace on him. Kept changing sides and like, man, when you're constantly pummeling your legs and turning this side and this side and hip escape, the core gets tired.
It always blows me away. Before we jump off of ADCC, like the Galvao's work rate and how prepared he is, I think, one of a kind.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You watch his Instagram during camp, and he'd be lifting at 6 a.m. Then he'd be at the class at 9 a.m. Then he'd be teaching. Then he'd be lifting again, maybe. Then he'd be doing another round. It's like, this guy doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, his work ethic blew me away. Really did.
I mean, he just shut himself out from work for 4 months. Like, he didn't teach a single class or anything. He didn't run the comp classes. He shows up to the comp class. He's a student.
That one match.
Him and Coach Fred would sit down and they design the entire camp before the camp starts, right? The whole thing. You set every schedule. You pick all the rest days. You pick all the days you need off. And then you put the work days together, right? And once it's developed, you stick to it.
Right.
You fulfill the schedule. He says it all the time. He's like, guys, make sure you fulfill the schedule. It doesn't have to be his schedule, but you got to make your own schedule. And whatever it is, you write it down and do it.
You don't just like flake out halfway through.
No, yeah. You write it down. You say, look, okay, you make your week schedule and you put down the most important things you have to do, whatever that may be. Maybe it's kids, time with your kids. Maybe it's work. Maybe it's whatever. Put the most important things you need to put down and then build your workouts around that. So you no longer have excuses.
We just threw up a little clip from the trailer there from the documentary that we made back in 2015.
Inside Atos.
Yeah, that's...
I was watching that the other day.
Oh, really?
I saw it pop up in my feed. I think someone shared it or something.
Yeah. Wow, people still digging it all this time.
It was good, man.
It was good.
The trailer was so good, too. I saw the trailer, and I was like, oh, I got to watch this again.
Yeah. Because it was around the time, I guess, that... I guess we made the documentary after his super fight with Cyborg in 2015. We came to the gym after he defended his super fight title. He won the super fight for the first time in 2015.
You guys released that video the week before Nogi Worlds 2015.
Right.
Right?
Remember he was prepping for to fight Homolo. Burkut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Burkut. And it was that moment in the documentary where Brandon Vera's in the room.
So gnarly.
Yeah. That looked like a wild camp.
That was, I think, one of the very first, that was the first training camp that we hosted in that gym. We had just switched to the gyms. And we had just put those mats down. And I think, honestly, we probably, that was probably the first week in that gym or something, I remember. That was the first training session we had there.
Wow. Reed has a great story about being in the room during that training session and kind of being up against the wall, like the mats, and just filming and just like getting completely taken out by guys coming at him. And I think that was the moment that he realized that, okay, I'm in their space now. I need to respect what these guys are doing and move out of the way.
Get out of the way.
They're not going to give a shit about me. Stop. So,
Yeah, the level of competitive rules is extreme. Like,
is there like a rule or anything about, you know, giving way in the gym? Because in crowded rooms, and you guys are busy, right? Yeah. There's so many guys, even with the expanded mat space.
Yeah, we've already outgrown the gym. Yeah,
again,
it's already packed.
But I mean, you've got obviously a limited amount of space, and you can do that by cycling in different groups at different times and stuff. But at the same time, you're going to get close to each other.
Yeah,
what's the rule for like kind of like who gets right of way?
Yeah, we don't have the I'm a black belt, get out of my way rule.
Because you're all black belts.
We don't have that rule, and to be honest, Galvao is just, he's just a good guy and doesn't believe that anyone is more special than anyone else. Right, it doesn't matter what belt you are. You need to be respectful and stay in your place, stay in your lane.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really, and to be honest, I don't really abide by the rule because sometimes like it's all about who invaded whose spot. If you're training here and they're training there, and they go into your turf, you need to go back to yours.
Got it.
Right, wherever you started, that's your spot.
Right,
and if you're the invader, you need to stop and move. There are certain situations where, like, okay, if it's two black belts and they're in a very complicated situation and it's difficult to move, maybe, and the other two are just in closed guard.
Let them have it.
It's a much simpler reset. Right. Just roll yourself over and reset. Right. You know, it doesn't really matter. Sometimes I pull rank even though I'm not supposed to. I'm just like, hey, go, get out of here.
Yeah.
But I try not
to. Do you think that could be mitigated by, you know, wrestling rooms? They have the rings actually like...
Oh, we got Reed and Josh rolling up here. Oh,
look at that. Throwback.
This is the end of 2016.
That's before Reed had long hair.
It was.
Wow. But, you know, wrestling rooms, they have like the actual circles on the mat. So you know where you are in or out of bounds, right?
Right. So if you look at the mats on these clips, you see we have the blue and the black, right?
Is that a competition size?
No, it's just, it's a half mat shy.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, in the IBJJ competition square, the center square is two mats, mm-hmm. two full rectangles.
Yep.
The centers of these are a half of a mat.
So it's a 1x1 meter for you people who understand metric.
Yeah.
Like, mats are 2 meters by 1.
Right. Like, yeah. We're missing a half mat extension on two sides.
It's like 6 feet by 3 feet, something like that, right? Each mat.
So. It's almost a competition mat, but no.
Well, that's nice because, you know, it shows you got enough space so you can simulate that.
But we changed the mats recently. Now it's all blue.
It looks good.
And the white walls.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely reflects the light better. Mm.
Yeah.
So you get better video quality, better picture quality.
Smart.
But I liked having the competition squares.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is in a very, very crowded room, people tend to want to be in the center of the square.
You're right.
Right? And so now you have people kind of crashing into each other because everyone's you just feel some kind of natural instinct that you want to put yourself inside the square. You don't want to roll on the black border right there. You see the black mat?
Mm-hmm.
And so Gaval thought it'd be better for a crowded room to have no variation in color.
Got it.
That everyone can just roll everywhere and no one feels obligated to start in the center of the square. I like the squares for competition training, but the business isn't competition training based. It's about students.
And I love that training. Sequence you just ran through there, by the way. You were just, it went Dascho, guillotine, monoplata, armbar. It looked complicated, but it's actually a really natural flow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they all flow into each other,
yeah.
based on the movements of the opponent.
Oh, did we just get 2 points? Did we just score a takedown?
That's not two.
He's trying his best, though. I like how Reed's not here and we're showing this footage. That's not two. That's the way to do
this. That's not two. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got on top.
Nice.
I wanted to piggyback actually off of the story of Reed filming and realizing he's in a pro training session. Mm. Josh, you just started doing kind of a remote consultation business of sorts where guys will hit you up and ask for comp training preparation.
Right.
There's usually, you were telling me, a moment of realization that, oh, this is a bit different. You know, what am I talking about here? What happens?
It's more intense than I think people realize. I think a lot of people think they know what it takes to prepare for a competition appropriately, and I think they're vastly underestimating what it's required. So like I used to think I understood what good competition preparation was. Okay, like when I was teaching jiu-jitsu in Arizona, I was the head instructor, mm-hmm. right? I was a purple or brown belt days. And I thought doing 5 rounds of 6 minutes was tough. I thought that was a good session. It's not. It's about half. It's about half of what you should be doing. And not including strength and conditioning, right? Mm-hmm. So for people who – and I had – and when you were talking about – like you were shocked at like how much you see Galbao work, right? Mm-hmm. I was shocked also when I first arrived in San Diego. I couldn't believe that these guys would have a training session, take 1 hour off to eat, shower, hydrate, and then go to the gym and lift weights. I was just blown away. I couldn't believe it. I was like, how the fuck do you guys do this? Like, this is crazy. Like, my body hurts so bad. But over the time, over years, I would start adding in some weightlifting sessions, and it just takes some adaptation. It takes time. It takes a lot of rest. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel terrible sometimes. You're going to feel like you're overdoing it. And maybe sometimes you are overdoing it. But if you just build it up slowly, you'll get there.
Stick to the plan.
Yeah, just stick to the schedule. Like, write down the schedule and some, you know, don't go from 0 to 100
right,
like you did.
You got to build up.
Yeah,
right?
Build yourself up to it. Yeah, if you go too hard too soon, you're going to get injured, you're going to get sick.
But what people think is 100 is actually nothing near. It's like their idea of what is 100 is probably 10 or 15.
It's low. I was like I said, I was shocked when I first went to Atos the first couple times, like back when Liera was a purple belt and Rolando Sampson was a blue belt.
Wow.
And I was a brown belt. And I saw how much these guys were training. It was like training session, weightlifting session, drilling session, evening session. 4 sessions. And I just couldn't believe it. And my body was hurting so bad. But and at first, I couldn't do all of it. I did too much. The first time I went to Atos, I hurt myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think I bruised something internally, like my stomach or my spleen or something. I had this really awful stomach pain, and I couldn't do the evening session. I went too hard too soon.
Oh, my God.
And this happens a lot with the visitors that come to Atos. They go too hard too soon. They try to do the 7 a.m. class, the 9 a.m. class, the comp class. You know, you get excited. You want to, like, do jiu-jitsu. You're finally in the mecca of jiu-jitsu, and you want to just go all out.
Yeah, but for sure.
It's a mistake. You have to build yourself up to this type of training. So it's taken me years, you know, to get to the point where I can train, lift, and train in the same day and not feel like garbage because of it.
I remember years ago, back before Flow, when I was making my independent videos, BJJ Hacks, and I did a video with Galvao and Ramon Lemos, the co-founder of Atos,
yeah.
And together they were the guys that came up with the team, right? And I think people forget Ramon because, you know, he's a coach. He's not a competitor. He's very much on the sidelines, yeah. And also he is still living in United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, he's in Emirates.
He's still there, right?
He's coaching the national team.
Yeah, he's been there for a while.
Yeah.
He's been there for a few years now. But
I think they take pretty good care of him.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he's doing well. He's doing great. He's done amazing work with the national team, especially the youth. But a lot of people don't realize that he was the Mendes Brothers coach.
Yeah.
Like, white through black, right? I mean, like, phenomenal coach, like, really created two of the best competitors.
His jiu-jitsu was phenomenal.
Ever seen. But just not a competitor himself, right?
Right.
But anyway, I was chatting to those guys, and I made the video, and you know, Hamon said something during that interview that I thought, really? Because I couldn't quite get my head around it, but you just laid it all out. He said that the Atos recipe for success is simple. That it was eat, sleep, train, minimum 3 times a day. That's it. And it's like, I was like, at the time, I was like, surely that's not possible. But from what you've just said, it absolutely is.
It is possible. Right. It's very difficult to do if you don't adapt to it slowly.
Yeah.
If you just try to change yourself
and
overnight.
And let's be honest, not everybody can do it. No. Not everybody can go through. Otherwise, there would be a world full of champions. Right. So it's only for a few, right?
You need to understand your body. You need to understand when you're about to get sick or when you really... You need to understand the difference between discomfort from training hard and requiring a break.
Oh, there's the video, by the way, of Ramon and Galvao training. So,
yeah, you gotta... His jiu-jitsu really is amazing. He's super fast. Like, I really love Ramon. He's great.
They ran through some really cool drills here.
He's a cool dude.
And I remember I made this video and I put it up online and I went into the gym and like black belts, really high level black belts in the room came up to me and they were like, we learned some stuff from that video. And they started drilling it right there. And I was like, that's really cool.
he was with us for about 2 months last year when he brought the national team.
He brought the squad.
Yeah, I was actually there one time. I went to go film Mike Perez. Months. I walked in and I'm like, why are all the UAE guys?
They were training for the Asian Games.
Wow.
And I think they took second place as a team. But
look at young Galvao looks in that clip, by the way.
they're gonna come back actually this in 2020.
That's cool.
They're gonna train again for the Asian Games and they're gonna stay with us for 2 months again.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
It was so great to have them. We had Faisal there. And all their guys are super tough. There was really great training.
Yeah, especially the color belts, right? The blues and purples.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah,
they're
great. I think what a lot of people maybe don't understand about UAE is like, why aren't there more high level black belts competing, right? So the issue is that Faisal is now master's age. You know, he's like 30 or over, right? And he's pretty much the only like big name black belt competing out of the UAE, and he's been around forever. But a lot of the kids, a lot of the, let's call them the teens, the adolescents, you know, they're pretty freaking good. You know, a lot of them have been doing it, since a small, young age in school as part of the school system. And then what happens is they go off and they start, they have to do national service. So every male,
2 years.
Adult male has to go off and join the army in the UAE.
Yeah.
And at that point, they're usually around about 18, 19 years of age. They're at like purple belt and usually they're pretty solid and then they take 2 years off and they don't come back because why would you at that point, you know? So it's like, if that kind of answers a lot of people. They're like, well, why don't they have more high level guys competing on the world stage? There's your answer. So
I did the same thing. I took 2 years off at Blue Boat. And I joined the Peace Corps.
That's when you did the Peace Corps in Turkmenistan?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it like coming back from that long layoff then? It must have been kind of rough.
I was very excited to get back on the mats.
Well, I'm sure you did.
I was super excited
but
to train.
But 2 years, no jiu-jitsu for 2 years, like coming back after that, that's
I was completely depleted.
Yeah.
Yeah, my body had just shrunk up. I had lost all muscles.
Like literally starting from scratch?
Were you doing any kind of athletic stuff over there?
No, there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
I lived in a village, a dirt mud brick village, where I had to put a bucket down a well and pull up water, and there was worms in my water.
Ugh, lovely. Like,
were you reconsidering your choices at that point?
No, I wanted an extreme experience, and I got exactly,
you got it.
I got exactly that. Yeah. But yeah, I was so happy to get back. Like, it was that time away that made me realize how much I missed and loved jiu-jitsu, and how I really just want to do jiu-jitsu, and I needed that. So, you know, it sucks that I had to take 2 years off to do that, and I always wonder like what would my jiu-jitsu be like now if I had that 2 years of training? But at the same time, if I didn't take that break, maybe I wouldn't be here.
Wouldn't have committed, maybe.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have known how much I loved jiu-jitsu and how much I needed it. Like, you have to lose something to realize how much you appreciate it.
Is there any particular video you'd like us to pull up? Something of yourself, maybe, from that we've done? Any cool matches or any clips or highlights or anything? We got some. We can pull out some stuff, Ryan, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We've got it running.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Don't ask me.
Got the entire Flow Grappling library at your disposal.
I don't feel like I didn't even really get to watch any of the ones that were already up there.
It's been on while we've been talking. We've just been too busy talking. But what about maybe one of your ADCC matches?
Yeah, let's pull up that match with Adam.
Oh, yeah. Adam Wodzinski. Nice.
Yeah, because he gave me a good fight.
So you were telling me earlier, but you were kind of shocked by his...
Yeah, he put me on the defense for pretty much the first half of the match, and I just didn't expect that. And I came out, right into the match right off the bat. Like, I attacked immediately because I knew he was going to pull guard. So I tried to jump on his head right when he pulled guard and just start putting on the attacks immediately. He did a really good job of hiding his chin from me. Like, he kept it tucked to his shoulder really well. Mm. And it was really difficult to get a good grip on it. I was trying to, like, claw at his face. Sometimes, man. I put my finger in their mouth on accident. I actually cut a scratch on my finger from Mateus's tooth one time.
Man, I remember you sent me the photos of your finger after that because it got infected, right?
Yeah.
Blew up.
Yeah.
It looked
gross. It was weird.
Gross.
Yeah, it was so weird how that happened.
Oh, my God. It was so nasty.
Yeah. But teeth are so dirty, man. If you guys...
There's a lot of bacteria in the mouth,
yeah,
right?
If you guys get a cut from someone's tooth anywhere on your body, you need to clean the fuck out of it. Yeah, sorry, excuse me.
Should be up right now.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, nice. Here we go.
Did you go back to the beginning? This is the beginning or no?
Yeah,
30 seconds in.
Yeah, I just jumped on his head right off the bat.
Yeah, you did not waste any time.
His hair is wild. That's straight out of the 70s.
Best haircut of ADCC, I think. You know?
I was sad because he recently shaved the mustache.
Yeah,
really? That thing was pretty awesome.
Chase is now the official Flow Grappling mustache aficionado, the specialist.
I like it.
You know, and I like the ADCC rules because they really do favor the aggressor, right? If you're counter grappling, they think you're losing in their eyes.
Oh, yeah.
If you're waiting to defend and counter strike, you're losing.
Well, ADCC is not a jiu-jitsu tournament.
No.
Right? And jiu-jitsu, that's probably one of the defining aspects of jiu-jitsu is the fact that you attack via defense, right? You counter-attack.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of jiu-jitsu. Gentle way. It's like using the opponent's strength against them. It's
traps.
You
use their aggression to finish them sometimes.
But they... I mean,
this is submission wrestling.
Exactly.
It's different.
It's a wrestling tournament with submissions.
It's a wrestling tournament with submissions.
Take the guy out. So it's an entirely different mentality as well, right?
Yeah. Look, I almost passed his guard, and then he hit that little hip switch and tilts me over.
Amazing. He just popped you off, right?
He did, he did a great job. And then pretty much for the next 4 minutes, he kind of launches attacks at me and puts me on defense. And then I start realizing, like, I'm kind of losing right now. Like, if it goes to a ref decision, I don't think I'm going to win.
That butterfly guard, the hook keeps sneaking
into that. Yeah, it's very difficult to keep it out. Yeah, he's very, he has a lot of dexterity in his legs.
Man, you just don't see people playing that game anymore.
I know.
Right?
It's a blast from the past.
It'll come back. It always does. Mikey Musumeci said that he was thrown off in his match with Bruno Malfacini because Bruno was playing a lot of
butterfly guard.
And he's like, I've never even seen this before. Like, really? He told me he went home and that
Mikey doesn't understand butterfly guard.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was like,
it's like, how do you bear and bolt someone when they're butterfly guard against you?
But how many people are using it regularly?
Not
like
too many.
A handful,
it was part of my A game when I was a purple belt.
That's going back a while, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There it is. See that foot sneaking in again. He's trying to get it in there. Uses the knee shield, push away a little bit, try and stick that foot in on the hip, but
yeah, Adam's tough.
Yeah.
He almost broke my arm. Like he had my arm fully extended at one point. And I think it was just because maybe he's used to this attack right here where he isolates the arm.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, they call it the violina in Portuguese. It's the straight armbar, right? The reverse armbar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'll get there. And I think he's just used to doing it in the gi, so he has that friction, and he's able to hold on to it better. And without the gi, it slipped out. I think that was really the problem.
While this match is playing, let's just talk about your ADCC experience in general, because, you know, obviously, life dream for you. You won the trials earlier this year in pretty awesome fashion. You know, a ton of submissions along the way.
Yeah.
And then you make it, and, you know, you put in the work, you do the camp alongside Andre. It must have been an incredible experience. But then you're there. Tell us about it.
To be honest, I felt very comfortable. I was very at home. Maybe it's because I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that I know, you know, like I'm pretty much friends with all the competitors. I'm friends with all the promoters. I pretty much know everyone there. And, with all the media too, I'm friends with all the media, and I was just very comfortable. I was very happy to be there. I didn't feel a lot of anxiety. I just felt excited.
Wow.
I was excited to be there. I was excited to do it. I knew I was prepared. I was ready. I have no excuses to fall back on. I have no excuses, even in my own mind. You know, sometimes people have excuses in their brain, but they don't verbalize them.
Right.
I don't have any. I you know, that I made one mistake in the match, and that's why I ended up taking third place. I mean, I had one mistake in, I think, the whole tournament, and that's why I took third place. And I can own that. It's my mistake, and that's that. And I had a great run, I thought. I'm very happy with
First match, Gabriel Almeida from Checkmate. You got the rear naked choke in the opener there. He was a Brazilian trials winner as well. So you know, you had a ton of matches in West Coast trials to qualify. He did the same thing down in Brazil. He had like five or even six matches or something. Yeah, some I really had five. Tough guys.
Yeah. I had five and I had a bye the first round. So it could have been six. But I think Stanley had six. He didn't have a bye.
The guy those trials
in the finals,
Stanley Rosa. We broke that match down yesterday, actually. So you'll be able to, we'll see that. That first match breakdowns you've ever done as well, huh?
On my own matches, yeah.
Yeah, we sat down yesterday and we shot breakdowns of your ADCC match, Nogi Worlds, even some Gi stuff from Pans. Looking at your games, it's really cool.
I normally do breakdowns for other people. I don't ever really do breakdowns for myself. So it was interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting because I know what I was thinking, you know? Right. So it's like, it's definitely not just like, oh, you should do this with your arm or you should do that with your arm.
Yeah.
I was thinking like, I remember what I felt. I remember what I was thinking or why I did that. I know why I made these decisions.
What was going through your head.
So I could talk, like literally talk about every single step. Like I moved my arm from here to here because of this. And I could literally have just talked about it for hours probably.
Do you watch yourself? Like, do you like to go back and then analyze yourself?
No.
No?
Not really.
Wow.
No, I watch a lot of, like you were talking about, like I do some online coaching for people like who are preparing for competition. So I ask them to send me a lot of their training videos or their competition videos, and then I break those down. But again, like a lot of times I'm thinking like, oh, why did you do that? Like, I don't understand. Like, but you don't feel what they felt. Like, I'm sure there was a reason why they made a decision to move their hand from point A to point B. But when you're watching your own match, it's different because you know exactly what you were feeling in that moment and why you did that.
You never have that moment of that kind of disconnect, you know, when you're watching yourself on video and you genuinely don't know why you did something.
Right.
Like,
that's more my experience.
Why did I do that? I mean, I've had those moments too. Like, why did I do that? It's so stupid.
Let me ask you something cool then about the competition experience, because everybody goes into a different state, a different mind state during competition.
Yeah.
Some guys, they're like hyper aware, everything's like louder, brighter, that everything's moving in slow motion, they enter that like flow state, right?
Yeah.
Some guys go out and they come back out or you see them on the mat and their eyes are wide open and it's almost like they see nothing at all. They're on autopilot and they come back off and they're just like, what happened? Like, even when they won, they're like, I don't know what just happened. But what goes through your mind? What state are you in when you're in? Are you like an analytical guy when you're on the mat, or are you just like a flow and like zero thought? What state are you in?
I used to be a very jovial competitor. Like, I would not take it too serious at all. Maybe when I was a purple belt and a brown belt. I didn't compete very much at brown belt, mostly at blue and purple. But like even before the matches, I would like be very friendly with the opponent, and I was never trying to take it too serious. I was just trying to have a good time. And then when I got to ASOS, like Andre kind of showed me the way of like getting serious.
Right.
Like, if you want to win, you're going to have to be serious. Like, you need to take this seriously. And like, once I made the decision to be a full-time grappler, I knew that I had to be serious if I wanted to make anything of this. Like, otherwise I'm just going to be an average Joe Schmo trying to have a good time at a tournament for fun. And what's more fun than winning, right? Now when I go out to compete, I just try to fight. Like, it's not a fight. I mean, I know people like to argue about matches and fighting, but it's a struggle. It's like you're fighting for something, right? You're working towards something. And I go out there and just do my best. I just give them everything I have.
But what's going on in your head during that match? Are you like, is there an internal dialogue? Are you kind of talking to yourself like, do this, don't do that? Or are you like, does everything just, the world go silent for that, you know, 10-minute match? Or
I definitely hear. I hear the people. I hear the crowd. It doesn't really bother me either way. It doesn't change anything I'm doing. If I hear people cheer, I don't get pumped. If I hear people booing, I don't really care.
Because you know, sometimes you see a competitor, right? And they're like, they're looking at their coach, they're engaged, and they're almost like communicating with them.
Yeah,
and stuff,
I try to listen.
Yeah,
I
but listen. Then there are other guys, it's almost like they're oblivious. Like, their coach is like screaming at them, move your hand, move your hand, move your hand, yeah. move your hand for the love of God, move your hand. And the guy's just like, he's just shut out from shut off from the world. So
the problem is you can get tunnel vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can also, yeah. And I definitely always listen to Galvao. I always listen to him.
Is that like the one voice you tune into?
Yeah, and I can spot him a mile away, like with my ears. Like, I mean, he's been. I remember one time I was fighting with Sinistro at American Nationals in the open class, no gi, and I was having a really hard time passing his guard. I was standing passing, you know, and he's just so flexible, and I was having a hell of a time. And I heard Galvao. He was like on the other side of the ring, like way, like 2 mats away, and he says, "Josh, pass on your knees." And I did. I dropped to my knees, and then within 30 seconds, I was past his guard.
Wow.
I grabbed his head, jumped on the guillotine, and, like, I passed. And I was like, Galvao, he's a very great strategist. And he never gives bad advice. But it's easy as a competitor to get tunnel vision. Like, you want to do this one technique, or you want to secure something in this one way, and you have tunnel vision, and you're just kind of getting obsessed over doing it this way, and it's not working. Sometimes you need the person with the outside perspective to yell something at you and just change your gear for a second. Like, hey, consider this. There's another option. There's more than one way to pass a guard.
Can you still tune into Galvao when he's using his human megaphone? You know what I'm saying? You know, so at tournaments, we've seen this happen a couple of times now in the past, that Galvao has gone and he lost his voice because he's shouting so much.
Yeah.
And he has like his human megaphone, because he whispers like...
To Tony Passos.
Is it Tony? Tony, I've seen Tony coaching himself, but sometimes he just like has a guy that is like...
Yeah, tell
like,
me to do this.
Yeah, he's like, grab the right hand. No, don't go to the left. Don't go to the left. And it's like he just repeats word for word what Galvao says.
Yeah. I mean, if I know Galvao's there, I know that he... whatever instruction is being yelled at me from my teammate is coming from him.
Right.
Yeah. So I can understand Lucas's voice very well. Jonathan Gracie is a really great coach. Jonathan Gracie is actually a phenomenal strategist.
Really?
And no one realizes it because he doesn't speak English much. He can. He's just super shy and he gets really embarrassed. But he's a brilliant strategist. Huh. Like, I think when he gets his English on point and you guys get to hear him like speak his mind in English well, you're going to be shocked at actually how much jiu-jitsu intelligence that kid has.
Tough competitor too.
Yeah, he's going to be phenomenal. You guys are going to see him for a long time.
He signed up at Nogi Worlds next week, huh?
Yeah, he's at middleweight.
Him, who else you got
there? We were going to have Rolando Sampson, but he was unable to make the points.
And
maybe you can answer this for me. When did the IBJJF implement the point requirement for Nogi Worlds?
So we only noticed it ourselves
recently, right?
Not that long ago. I mean, right. I guess when they published the Nogi Worlds page on their website, it was on there. I just don't think anybody really realized
it.
Because when you go to the page, who can register, it's right there in black and white. You need 30 points to qualify to compete as a black belt adult male.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're a returning world champion for yourself, you only need 8 points to qualify. Even if you gave 3 years and then you went back, you'd still be able to qualify. But is also an exception if you're a returning brown belt world champion. So for somebody like Ronaldo Jr. from last year,
it has to be
from the previous year. Right. So somebody like Ronaldo, who won brown belt last year, he could sign up this year as a black belt without any qualifying points. But for anybody else, they would need to go and hustle and go to the Nogi circuit and get those points in the tournaments to qualify.
Yeah.
So I think that caught a few people out, huh?
Yeah, Rolando Sampson's out. Rafael Vasconcelos is out. And...
Nogi Worlds looks a lot different this year. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. We were looking through the divisions, and we got a preview video going up on the site shortly with your thoughts on that. But overall thoughts, there's only 2 returning champions from the male black belt divisions this year.
The whole tournament?
For the entire black belt adult tournament.
Cyborg?
Black belt male. From last year.
Nobuhiro
Sawada, the rooster weight, and Joao Miao was signed up as well. And then every other weight class, there are previous champions, like Cyborg, who was champion for a few years ago, but every other weight class, the last year's champion is not there to defend the title. It's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, but it is an ADCC year, and I think a lot of guys,
that's a factor.
They're burnt out. I'm burnt out. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I feel. I'm just, that ADCC camp took it out of me, and then I did the fight to win right after that, like 3 weeks after. So basically extended my camp for 3 more weeks, and I was just fried.
Do you think the proximity to the gi season as well? Like, guys are always maybe looking forward to
Europeans. It's like if you have, you know, as a competitor, you definitely want to give yourself a break for a month or two, and you have to kind of decide which month you want to do that in, which basically means which big tournament do you want to miss. Maybe for the, yeah, if like the guys are looking at Euros or Pans, yeah, this would be the time to take your break. And it's the holidays, you know. Yeah. It's like, if there was a time to take a break, this is it, because then you get to go see your family. So
yeah, you know, that's the thing about jiu-jitsu, there's no off season, right? It's a year-round sport,
right?
It is tough. We get 2 weeks, basically. You have Christmas and New Year's, and then back on the grind.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I can gear it up for Europeans.
This is why I don't do Europeans ever. I did it once, and I would like to do it again. But to be honest, that's a big seminar month for me in January, February.
Which is another side of being a full-time professional, right?
Right. You have to choose your periods of money-making. Lately, for the past few years, I just make all my money in the first half of the year, and I compete in the second half of the year. And that's what I did last year. You know, I did the trials, which was abnormal for me, right? I would have stayed abroad longer and done more seminars if I didn't have to come back to do the trials. But then after the trials, I went on my little hustle all the way up through May. And then in June, and through June also. And then in July, I slowed down, August, and then I focused on ADCC. And then for the past 4 months, I really haven't been hustling or making a whole lot of seminars, one or two here and there, but that's kind of what actually this week is. This week is me getting back on my grind, you know. Nice. So I'm on my way to Virginia for a seminar this weekend, and then New Jersey, and then Philadelphia. And
you're saying January? You're going to
January? I'll be in Australia.
Nice.
Yeah, we're doing a no-gi summit in Melbourne. It's being hosted by 10th Planet.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, so we have six instructors, Kyotera being the main event.
Those no-gi summits look awesome. They've had a
they're
couple
super
now.
Fun. Yeah.
They bring in some really good guys. Yeah, for us, right.
Phil Schwartz puts them on. I don't know if he's the number one organizer. As far as I know, he is. Maybe he shares the work with someone else. I'm not sure, but he does a really good job. Yeah. So we had one in Portland a few months ago, and Marcelo Garcia was the main event. It was cool, super cool for not me bad. To get to share an instruction mat with Marcelo. You know, like we were on different days, but it was still cool.
Yeah.
It was cool because a lot of my jiu-jitsu was influenced by Marcelo when I was a purple belt, and it was great. It was great to hang out with him and meet the legend.
Exchange some guillotine tips and ideas. You know, the Marcelo team being
we chit chatted. Yeah, I mean, I had a horrific eye infection, so I couldn't
touch anybody.
I couldn't touch anyone. Yeah, I had to I walked in with sunglasses, right, and everyone was like, "Who's this asshole with sunglasses?" And I was like, "You guys don't realize I just can't see." Wow. And I didn't realize at the time that it was the EKC virus.
Yeah.
I thought it was just pink eye, so I was already on antibiotics for a few days, and I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna be good pretty soon. Like, this should be on the decline, you know, by now." But I just told everyone, I was like, "Look, I'm gonna teach. I'm gonna talk. I'm going to touch one person, which is my uke, and he volunteered for this position, and he is fully aware of the risks he is taking."
Did he get it?
He didn't get it. No, because I sanitized my hands between every single technique.
Wow.
You know, I just took a little towel, dabbed my watery eyes, hand sanitizer, and I just talk and touch him, and I just didn't touch anyone else, and I think it was good. I don't think anyone got it.
Nice. The tropical eye rot. That was that was wild, huh?
Is it done? Is it done? Is it gone now? Or is it still
floating
around?
Heard some post-ADCC that it actually made its way down to Florida.
Yeah,
because it was basically in two locations at one point, right? It was in New York with all the DDS guys, and Craig Jones had it, obviously, and a bunch of others from there. And then it was in San Diego. And I lost count of the amount of guys from your gym who had it.
At least half a dozen.
Wow.
Yeah, the Rotolo boys had it.
Yeah, Batista Johnson's
me,
Gracie,
Johnson's,
you.
And a couple of the blue belts got it, too.
But yeah, somehow,
I heard it was up in TriStar, up in Canada too. That's what I heard.
Apparently, that could be patient zero. That may be how it got there from there down to Henzo's, because they've got a link, right? A lot of the guys, like Oliver Taza, is a TriStar guy.
Yeah.
Who else is it? It's Pierre
Crenston, is he?
Crenston, I'm not sure, but Pierre Leclerc as well. He's another DDS stroke TriStar guy. So who knows? They could have brought it over the border.
Made its way to Florida.
Yeah.
Coco posted about it.
He got it too.
Yeah.
So
Cyborg had it, but I think it's kind of fizzled away. Even Mo
seems
like
Mo
got it.
Even Mo got it. Even ADCC promoter Mo. And Mo was super paranoid at ADCC.
Right.
He wasn't shaking hands with anybody. He wasn't even fist bumping. He was just giving like
elbow taps.
Forearm, elbow tap. Yeah. He's like, I ain't touching nobody. Like, I had a bottle of hand sanitizer in my pocket that entire weekend. Seriously.
We were all ready to get it. Like, it's just going to happen.
The trick is just don't touch your face.
Yeah.
Don't touch your face. It's so hard. It's like a human thing. They just like, of course, you want to touch your face. Like, even I catch myself doing it all the time. don't do it. Don't touch your face.
Gross. You know, this will be a really good time to maybe pull up some reader questions, huh? We put out the call on the gram and on Facebook, and just we were asking some people like, let's talk. Let's see what you got for Josh. Ryan, yeah. I believe that you have some reader questions. You want to bring some up?
Yeah, absolutely. G Money BJJ asked Josh, who would you like to face next?
How did I know this question was
coming? the classic. Yeah. Who do you want to fight next?
This. I don't know. I don't really think about it much. Like,
what about an event? Do you have any events you want to be on? Any stages you haven't fought on yet?
Is there an objective? Is there a goal that you would like to achieve that you haven't done yet?
I told Seth that I would like to do more fight to win events in the gi because Ooh. I've actually never done a submission only gi match. Never done one.
Nice.
That would be great. Yeah. Sign us up. We'd love to see that.
That's not true. I did Gracie Worlds. And they had a gi and no gi. But I've heard the gi day was much smaller than the no gi day. Right. Like, it's very much a no gi event. The gi day was very slim, but I did have a submission only match.
Nice.
But anyways, I would like to do some fight to win submission only matches so I can show people that I'm really not just a no gi guy.
There it is.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's my plan for
this
year.
What else we got, Ryan?
Does Josh prefer arm in or arm out guillotine?
Well, that's an excellent question. I really appreciate that because I don't actually understand why people call the arm in guillotine the arm in guillotine because I see it as an arm out guillotine.
Oh.
Chase, spicy. May I?
You may.
Look, I don't see here you I don't go. See an I don't see an arm in here. I see an arm out. The arm in guillotine is this. This is an arm in guillotine. This is a real thing. It's an actual guillotine with an arm in. Thank you. So
hope I'm still connected.
I hope so. But I understand what his question was. His question is, do I prefer to be like guillotine people with just their head or overhooking their arm?
Right.
And I definitely always prefer overhooking the arm because they no longer have that hand to use as a line of defense, right?
What about 10-finger guillotine?
I don't like 10-finger guillotines.
Really?
No. Yeah, because you're just holding the head on on your chest. You're putting the back of the head on your chest and you're doing this. I've had too many bad experiences where I didn't hold it properly and the head popped out and blasted my chin.
Bit
a hole right through my
tongue. I've done that to somebody. Yeah.
I've pierced my own tongue with my teeth at least half a dozen times. Jeez. Like just a straight puncture, like straight through it.
Half a dozen?
At least. Damn. I've chipped teeth.
Do you wear a mouthpiece?
I was going to say a mouth guard might have come into play at some point.
I don't wear one either. No.
I can't stand
it. I used to years ago, but I stopped like a long time
ago. They chew up the upper part of my gums. Like, I don't know. Maybe it was just a bad mouth guard. I don't know. But if that person has two free hands, that's two hands of defense that they're gonna start clawing at your hands with. So at least if you hook one, they only have one hand to defend with. And if they're defending with that hand, they're not posting, so you're sweeping them. So it provides a much more tactical advantage. Also, if you do get on top of them and you have the arm isolated behind your back, you have a few other attacks like the monoplata and stuff. So,
but you never go for like the high elbow guillotine.
My shoulders are too tight to do that. I can't do it. I can't get my elbow up high enough. Yeah.
And I found this out the hard way years ago because I was getting some wrist problems and I went and I got an X-ray and it turned out that I think you have something like 7 bones in your wrist apparently. I only have 5 because 2 of them are fused together. So that's why I cannot like do the high elbow guillotine on one side because I can't like throw my wrist over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's so and the shoulder thing. So
when I just control the head, I don't feel like I have control.
Mm.
I feel like they can swoop with their head and they're going to find a way to get it out. I think if you hook the arm, you have much better control.
Easier to hand fight when it's. When the both hands are right here as well, right?
Yeah,
because they've got both hands to actually defend. So
They have 10 fingers to deal with instead of 5.
Yeah,
and 5 is much less than 10. Obviously,
there we go.
Absolutely, exactly. Enough, in fact, Ryan, what else you got, bro?
We have a question about weight cutting. Josh, what are your thoughts about weight allowances versus DQ, and considering the costs and effort to compete? And do you think that weigh-ins should be at the time of division? Or the morning or the night before.
Right. What do they mean by weight allowance?
Maybe a pound.
Like
over.
An extra like pound?
Yeah.
Like the extra pound?
More or less a pound.
Okay.
Isn't that just increasing the weight division by 1 pound?
Yeah, it's just changing the weight class, right? Like if you tell someone they get a 1 pound allowance, it's no longer 145. Like the weight class now becomes 146.
What about 1 pound allowance with a penalty? You start with like you know, penalty points.
Down or 2 points.
Like you, if you overweight.
Then it's not just an extra pound. Then you're penalized.
Interesting.
You only get one shot on the scale as well, right?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
How does it work in wrestling? You used to wrestle. Did you get multiple chances to weigh in?
Yeah, you had a window of 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours. Yeah. Like if you didn't make it the first time, you get to go out and run around. I mean, in the IBJJF, you technically have that too. They have the test scale and they have the official scale. You only get one shot at the official scale.
Everybody always says they're different though, right? They always complain.
They have to err on the side of safety, right? Yeah. Like test scale should be lighter than the official scale. So if you make it on the test scale, you absolutely make it on the official scale. One year I saw Johnny Tama get DQ'd. Sorry for calling him out, but sorry, not sorry. I mean, it happened. And he swore they were different. He swore it. He's like, no, I checked on the test scale. I was good. And on the official scale, I wasn't good. And the head referee, Angelino, he grabbed someone. He said, okay, step on the official scale. Go step on the test scale. Step on the official scale. They're the same. And, wow. And he went through it. He went through the test. He gave Tama the benefit of the doubt and checked it.
That's fair.
And it was the same. Like, and a lot of people were looking. There's a lot of eyes on it. We all saw it. And, it was unfortunate for him at that time. But I, in my experience, I've always felt the official scale is just a little bit less than the test scale. Or a little bit more. It's more. The test scale is less. So
I'm with you.
We got it.
What was the question again?
What about time of weigh-in? Yeah, that was
Yeah. So I don't think cutting weight is a good thing, right? Because let's be honest. Like, if you need a weight advantage to win a match, do you really have better jiu-jitsu? Do you?
That's a very good question. I'm assuming it's rhetorical. You're actually asking me.
No, I'm just letting everyone think about it for a second. Why do people feel they need 5 more pounds? What is 5 pounds going to do for you? Do you really think that 5 extra pounds over your opponent is going to make the difference and you're going to win?
But it's like 10 pounds sometimes or more.
But in the IBJJF, it's pretty hard to recover 10 pounds when you weigh in the moment before.
That's true. Right. That's true.
So I think that's why the IBJJF does that. They don't
dissuade from weight cutting.
Yeah, they're trying to discourage weight cutting. You have to step on the scale and then go fight the match. Every time that I've ever cut weight at an IBJJF tournament, I perform like shit. I don't feel good because I don't have time to rehydrate. I don't have time to recover. I don't have time to eat. I don't have any food in me. I feel terrible. And that's why my performance at Nogi Worlds 2017 was so terrible. I cut.
Oh, you went down to middleweight, right?
I went to middleweight and I killed myself to make it there. I had to I dieted it off probably 12 pounds over 6 weeks. And then I had to cut 6 pounds the night before in the sauna. Mm. And I just felt horrible. I felt miserable. I think I won every match just by a margin, like barely at the last, maybe it was the last minute or it was a small margin of victory. I even remember the very first match. It was 0-0 all the way to the 30-second mark. And I think, man, I was like, am I going to lose in the first round? Like it can go either way. It's not it's a close match. Like, and luckily for me, he got a penalty and then he felt obligated to shoot. And then I caught his neck and I turned it into something. But I felt terrible the whole tournament. That was the match I had with Dante. I had that match with Philippe in the finals. I won by an advantage.
So if you think that if they were to institute like a, say like an 7:30 till 9:30 a.m. weigh-in period where everybody has to weigh in and then that's it, you know, that it's only going to basically increase the amount of weight cutting.
Right. So let's look at Fight to Win. It's the night before weigh-in.
Right.
I feel like a lot
like
of
MMA almost. Yeah.
Right. I feel like a lot of people are more inclined to cut weight because they have more time to recover. But
like literally 24 hours.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And
you see it at Worlds as well. A lot of people drop down a division because they know if they make the finals, that's the next day. So they got to survive that first day.
Right.
And they look like shit. But then they have the whole...
For depending on the size of their bracket, they can only have maybe one match that first day, right?
Like right.
Especially if you're Rooster or Ultra Heavy, you probably only got one match in your division that first day. And they can weigh in, get through it, and like you say, then recuperate, and they're good to go the next day.
Dante and I had a funny exchange, actually, because we fought on the second day on the semifinal. So we both had cut a lot of weight. And Sunday morning, I remember I ate a massive breakfast, just the biggest, baddest, like French toast, scrambled egg, sausage breakfast.
Making me hungry, Josh.
Like it was the baddest breakfast ever, and it sat in my stomach like a brick for hours.
Shocking.
It did not digest the way I was hoping, and I went out to that match with Dante with a stomach full of food. It had been hours, but the food, my stomach was just like, what is all this stuff that we haven't seen in 6 weeks? And then Dante told me the exact same thing. He's like, bro, I had a stomach full of food. I ate way too much for breakfast. And I did too. And I was like, that's why we were both like gassing out in the match. We were literally just sitting on each other like.
Stomachs just talking and to each other.
We both had just massive bellies full of food.
Wow.
I've always performed better when I'm underweight and well-fed. Always like 5 pounds underweight, but well fed and hydrated. I feel amazing and I perform well. And I feel the weight cut on those guys when I'm hanging on their head and I'm pushing them around. I feel that they had cut the weight.
You're at full capacity and they are.
And they're not. And they're not. And I feel that. And then I get motivated from that. I was like, okay, I can break this guy. He's on the edge right now. He's getting tired and he's doesn't have the energy to push. So that's when I start pushing really hard. And I can push hard because I'm at full capacity.
So ideally you're 3 or 4 pounds like water weight before a tournament and that's all you got to worry about?
I don't even like to worry about 2 pounds. Like I would just prefer, even at ADCC, I was well under. I weighed in with all my clothes on. Like I was several kilos underweight.
Who's the biggest weight cutter that you know or train with? Like who's the guy in the room that's dropping the most amount of weight to?
You know, at ADCC, it was Ty.
Wow.
Ty really sucked himself up.
Well, he was also a last-minute call-out.
Yeah, and the thing about ADCC was, like, you get invited to that division, you have to do that division. You don't get invited to 66 and then get to opt into 77. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen. So
how much did he cut?
It was a lot, man. It was, like, more than 16 pounds or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it was – I mean, he – after the tournament, he blew up to my weight.
Yeah,
he was huge in that match with Wagner.
I saw him like about 5 weeks after ADCC. No, like about 4 weeks, about a month after. Totally unrecognizable. He was huge.
Yeah,
I used it already. But he was a chonker. He was thick.
We had the twins on the podcast a couple nights ago, and Cade was telling us that Ty was literally just eating until he would vomit.
Oh my god!
After he would eat, vomit. And then continue eating. Yeah, he would continue eating. That's what they told us. Yeah.
Oh, that's bad.
guys. I like what the IBJJF does. I really do. I like that they have the weigh-in right before the match, and it discourages people from weight cutting. And if you feel that you need a weight cut in order to perform well, there's a problem with your psyche and there's a problem with your jiu-jitsu. Okay, if you think 5 pounds is going to make the difference between winning and losing, the problem is not your weight, it's your jiu-jitsu and probably your confidence. So I would prefer that the IBJJF keeps what they're doing, keeps the weigh-ins right before the match, and people will just stop cutting weight. Just stop. Just stop doing it. Why? I really like what ONE Championship does for MMA.
Oh, they have multiple weigh-ins, right?
Well, they sign people, and whatever that person was fighting whatever division they were doing in the past, they have to go up one division. If you're a 155er and then you sign with ONE, you have to go to 170. You don't have a choice. But they do this to everyone. So the whole division gets bumped up and all the same guys are still fighting the same guys. And no one has to weight cut.
The massive weight cuts, yeah.
No one has to weight cut. So you're going to have healthier fighters, probably better fights. Right?
Very nice. Yeah.
What else we got, Ryan? I'm sure we got a ton of questions still.
Any hope for Josh Hanger versus Craig Jones?
Of course. It'll happen. Yeah. I'll find the right time, the right venue, the right paycheck, and it's going to happen. Yeah.
This close, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to retire without having to throw down with Craig. Yeah, it'll happen.
You guys were – there was a little running battle throughout ADCC as well as to who could take the most submissions as well, right? Mm-hmm. You were at the end of day one, you were like, who else has got that many submissions?
Well, yeah, it was only three of us that had double submissions on day one.
You, Craig, and
Gordon.
Gordon, yeah, right.
That was it. There's only three competitors that got double submissions on day one. And then, on day two, both Craig and I got one submission and one loss. So, tied up. Nice. We're tied up.
Yeah, tied.
I like Craig. He's cool.
He is cool. He's a good guy.
Yeah, we'll have that match eventually. I don't know when or where, but it'll happen. It's inevitable.
Any tips for people that are trying to avoid guillotines altogether?
Getting guillotined or?
Getting guillotined.
Remove your neck.
You know, there's one thing that some of my teammates do that's pretty effective, but they play guard on their back and they put the back of their head on the mat and they keep their hands up like this.
They just lie flat on their back.
Yeah, but it's not a very effective way to play guard either.
No.
Yeah, so if your goal is just to avoid guillotines, yeah, you can do that. But I don't know how you're going to launch any kind of attacks whatsoever.
Who's the toughest guy to catch with a guillotine in your room?
Nassar.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know, understand what it is about him, but he can just survive and gurgle inside a guillotine for so long that your arm will burn out.
Wow.
So he, for me, he's the guillotine workout, right? If I can squeeze on him as hard as I can for as long as I can until he pops his head out or until I burn my arm out. Yeah, he's the only one that can just survive inside a guillotine for like a minute of just me cranking it, and he's just like, but he, I don't know what it is about him. He has a soft trachea.
I'm flipping that out. That's gonna be a standalone.
Yeah, he can survive inside the guillotine for so long. It's very hard to finish him with it. I usually will use it to sweep him instead and just at least get on top. But for finishing, it's very difficult. But I see it as a challenge, you know? I like to squeeze his neck as long and as hard as I can. I think even one time I was squeezing him for so long and he was gurgling so much. I was like, oh, he's going to tap. He's almost there. And my arm is just smoked, you know? I'm just like, ugh. And he finally escaped and I just got so angry. I was like, why won't you tap? I just like shoved him. I said, I hate you. But it's like, it's that kind of workout that makes the squeeze strong, right? Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have such a strong squeeze. He makes me work on it so much.
I love that post that you made a while back about how you're a connoisseur of chins. And you kind of like a little descriptor about all the different guys in the room, like Kynan, you know, he's got that
big chin.
Fat, juicy,
big old chin to hang on to. Like, but then like Thanos Batista chin. Is really difficult, you know.
And Batista has a round head shape. It's very difficult.
Short neck.
It's like trying to chin grip a basketball, right? Wow. Like you really can't get a good handle on it. But like holding a football, super easy, right? You kind of have a football face.
Thanks.
Jace.
Thank you.
And it kind of comes to a point. You know, it's a nice little lever to grab onto.
We just got a question. Does Josh or Kynan have the best guillotine at Atos?
I taught Kynan the guillotine.
Oh,
he publicly credits me. He does
have a pretty savage guillotine.
Yeah, of course. Right. And when he was a purple belt, I used to just slap the guillotine on him over and over and over. It was actually Kynan when he was a purple belt in 2016. We were training for Nogi Worlds, and he was the first one that was like, Josh, you're going to be Nogi World Champion. And it was because I guillotined him like 5 times in a row, and he was just like,
wow,
I don't know how anyone's going to stop that.
That's cool.
Yeah, he called it.
That's a nice moment.
Yeah, it was nice, you know. And he definitely developed the guillotine also.
He's used it to, I mean, he just put, incredible effect. I mean, you know, time I ever really saw Kynan, you know, first time I registered Kynan was at the ADCC trials in Brazil 2017 when he won. And he beat Patrick Gaudio in the final. And
yeah,
I was like, who is this kid? Right. He's wearing a purple belt rash guard. Like, who is this kid? And I got talking to him, and I think he finished something like, it was either 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6 matches that day, you know, and like a couple of guillotines, a couple of rear nakeds, but he was just killing people. And I got talking to him, and, you know, he told me about, you know, where he was from and about how Andre had told him, you got to do the ADCC trials, man, you know. And then first round at ADCC that year, and he was a brown belt now, taps out Pablo Popovich.
Put him to sleep.
Yeah. Pablo Popovich, the returning champion, former ADCC champion, one of the toughest guys. And he retired him.
That was
Pablo
last
hasn't
one.
Fought since. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kynan was just at the time, he's like 18, I think it was, right. Something like that. And Kynan only turns 22 in January.
Yeah.
Isn't that scary?
That's nuts.
And he won Nogi Worlds with a guillotine on
Popolo.
Yeah.
And he won Europeans this year against Felipe Andrew with a guillotine as well.
And he submitted Joao Gabriel.
He did in the Gied, right? These were both
King of the Mats.
Yeah. King of the Mats in Moscow,
King of the Mats.
So,
yeah, he almost got Leandro at the Spider, huh? He had him in the guillotine. I was like,
he did. Almost. He did, yeah. Man. Yeah. That was close,
Leandro
huh?
doesn't give up so easily.
No.
Man, just got a new question. Josh, will you ever open your own academy?
I think about this every day. Yeah. You know what the problem is? I can't pick a city that I want to live in forever.
Austin's pretty nice.
Yeah. Is it? Should I open it right next to the Onnit? I want to. It's a thing. It's on my bucket list. It's a thing that I want to do. I just, honestly, I really cannot decide where I would do that. It's not, to be honest, I have the savings ready to go. I just need to pull the trigger on it. And I even have investors that want to, I mean, I don't know that having investors is even a good idea, but I've always heard don't.
There's no barriers to you opening
the gym
right now.
Yeah, exactly. I have no barriers. You could if you wanted, I have all the – everything's ready to go. I just have to decide to do it and pull the trigger, but I just don't know where. I don't know where I want to go. I like San Diego a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough city to leave.
It is. It's a great city. It's a great jiu-jitsu. All my friends are there. I mean, I have a good thing going at Altos, and you know, like what happened to the Matt Byrne podcast if me and Keenis were separated?
Well, I think the good thing is that wherever you go, the Matt Byrne will live on.
Yeah,
wherever you can take it wherever you want.
We'd probably just have fewer episodes together, or we'd do them remotely. I don't know, but yeah, I'd think about it. Probably within a few years, it'll happen.
Let's wrap up with one more question, Ryan. What we got?
How happy were you when Keenan asked you to co-host the Matt Byrne podcast?
Oh, my God. Get out of here.
Who's that? It's a bit of who's that submitted by?
Moonfox.
Keenan Cornelius.
Yeah, right. Question. No. it's a bit of a running joke between you guys, yeah, right? Yeah. Whose idea was it to create the podcast?
It was mine.
It was your idea. Yeah. There you go.
I have the screenshot that proved it.
Just in case anybody else might.
I've saved it in multiple locations so you can't steal it and delete it.
Should anything happen to you, it automatically gets released here.
Yeah, but we did do it at his house, and now with his new house purchase, that we have a separate room that we have dedicated to it. So yeah,
you both contributed it in your own way, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, we definitely share the work. I care more about just uploading the audio versions. He cares more about the video version, and we just split the work like that. And it's been a good thing. Yeah, I'm really happy with it. And if you guys don't know, check out the Matt Byrne podcast.
I'm a fan. I listen to it it's all the time. I think it's great.
Everyone
actually
listens to it.
I like listening to the banter between you guys. You know, you've got obviously you guys have known each other a long time, and you know, you know each other so well. It's so funny to hear you guys go at it sometimes, because it's
we pretty much disagree on everything.
Pretty much. Yeah. It is great. It's like what's that movie with the two old grumpy men living in the same apartment?
Is that called Grumpy Old Man?
Funnily enough, there you go. But it's just like they're constantly bickering about everything. Yeah. And it's like, you know.
I mean, think about it. We are opposites. I mean, like, he's a guard player. He prefers the gi. I'm a no-gi guy. I prefer the top.
Have strong opinions.
We definitely disagree on everything. But like, I would like to say, people should really stop getting so upset about like little individual statements that we make. Like, we don't rehearse.
Don't take them out of context.
Yeah,
right?
Don't take it out of context. Just try to understand the overarching topic and the point being made. Like, we don't rehearse. We don't do research before we go in there. Like, we don't have time for that. And if we did, it would become a much different show. It'd be much more rehearsed and unorganic and boring. You know, we go in there and we just sit down and we wing it. We have a few topics that we want to hit on, but yeah, if we don't hit like the facts on the head every time, like, give us a break. Like, no one cares about your fact-checking DM. Like, I don't need it. I don't care. Like, I'm sorry if I missed a year by 1 year. Oh, sorry. It doesn't matter, guys. Just let it go.
Yeah. Don't take it so seriously.
Yeah, don't take it so serious. We don't take it serious, so you should probably not take it so serious.
No one likes a pedant, you know?
It's just for fun, man. We're just doing it for fun.
Very cool. Well, man, Josh, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you in the studio. I got to say, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah. We've done a lot with you while we're here. You've done the match breakdowns. We've done the Fix My Game. Mm. You did a great preview of the divisions for Nogi Worlds. Fantastic episode of the podcast right here. And I think it's time to go get some lunch, shall we?
Yeah. Love it. Awesome. Guys, well, thanks for watching.
Josh, you're a pro. Why don't you do the sign off?
Bring us on home here, Josh.
We'll see you next time.
To be honest, we don't have a very good sign off for the Maverick podcast. We pretty much decide,
let me show you how it's done.
Yeah, show me. We just say, I guess, check you guys later.
Guys, it's been real. It's been fantastic. It'll be another episode of Fistful of Collards in 2 weeks time, because next week we're going to be at the 2019 IBJJF World Nogi Championships. It's the last big event of the year.
Yep.
And I'm excited. It's going to be interesting. As we were saying, there's going to be a lot of new champions crowned. It's definitely going to be one for the history books. And the week after that, we actually have, and I can announce it now exclusively, make the reveal, we have another special guest coming in the week before Christmas. Muhammad Ali.
Very nice.
Oh, Muhammad's great.
Yeah, we got Muhammad Ali, 2018 IBJJF World Champion, one of the most entertaining and exciting, and probably the biggest heart in jiu-jitsu as well.
Yeah,
always lays it out there. Always puts it on the line. Muhammad Ali is going to be joining us in the studio next week. So awesome.
2 weeks.
Muhammad's a good dude. I like him a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. See you guys in the next one.
See ya.